To me, it all comes down to who's controlling the money, right? And so whether you're talking about a venture fund or private equity or mortgage brokers or in the public space, ETFs, who's deciding on what index to use, or certainly in mutual funds and other types of public equities, that it's the people at the portfolio management level that I think are essential to solving for this problem. And we know that right now at the portfolio manager level, that probably around 8% of portfolio management decisions are made by gender diverse teams. Not only that, if you use the denominator of AUM rather than the number of bodies, it's clear that men who are portfolio managers control probably around 12 and a half times more capital. So it's not just about it bringing more people and more people of color and more women into this space. It's actually helping them manage more money.
Welcome to How Women Inspire, where women lead, invest, and give. I'm your host, Julie Castro Abrams, founder and CEO of How Women Lead and managing partner of the venture firm How Women Invest. Feminist, social justice warrior, mother, friend of 50,000 plus badass women, and an expert at helping top executive women get on boards and break down barriers for women entrepreneurs, investors, and social impact activists. In this podcast, we interview women influencers and leaders from across the globe who are in the C-suite, founding companies, investing, and agents of change. We'll share stories of how women lead. We'll provide insights and data, tips you can put into action, and get to know the women who have fiercely and unabashedly stepped into their power in leadership and opened doors for other women like you. We discuss topics ranging from the journey of getting a board seat, how we can counter cultural frameworks that change the way the world views women leaders, what we're doing to close the gender funding gap, and driving equity for women in all aspects of life and career. My goal is that after every episode, you walk away feeling inspired, unstoppable, ready to level up and step into your power and influence. I want to break down the cultural narratives that hold us back collectively and those messy messages you heard that are taking up way too much of your brain space. I want you to know you're invited in because I know that together we can change the culture, change opportunities, and create the future we want for our daughters and sisters and friends. This is our time. Are you in? Welcome to How Women Inspire. Today's guest is Ruth Shaber. She's an MD and founder and serves as the president of the Terra Health Foundation. They use philanthropic capital to advance health and economic outcomes for women. She's the co-author of The Double X Edge, Unlocking Higher Returns and Lower Risk. As you know, this is a woman after my own heart. I'm sure as you listen to this introduction, you're like, oh, no wonder Julie's talking to her. She is like the goddess, the woman we're all looking to. And she's now leading the Diverse Investing Collective with the goal of increasing the number of women and people of color in the United States in the investment industry and the amount of assets that they're managing. Ruth is also the co-founder and board chair of RIA Ventures, which is a group of foundations and investors that are collaborating to bring new types of capital and enterprise to the field of reproductive health in the U.S. Right on time, Ruth. This is absolutely so critical. She's had a tremendous career as an OBGYN, but her focus has always been on systems change. She was at Kaiser Permanente from 1990 to 2012, which to me, I just want to say thank you for that because I know that's really hard work. You have done so much in our world. You've been a great partner for us, making sure that women who are leading in reproductive justice, at least over the last couple of years, have gotten extra support because it's been such a tremendously complicated environment. Ruth, I can't thank you enough. And everybody who's listening here, I know you're just applauding, saying thank you, thank you. And I can't wait to dive in. So I'm glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Julie. And right back at you for all that you do. I think we all need to step in and do what we can to change this broken system that we all live in.
We're going to talk about serious stuff today. We're both finance leaders and talking about the you know, really systems change. But let's be fun for a minute, because I know that you are. You are also a woman that spreads a lot of joy and love in your day-to-day. What is that song for you? That sort of
theme song that you might listen to on the days when you need to pick up or when you want to celebrate. When you burst the double X edge, what was your song that you put on and danced around your house to?
Well, there's no question that Patience and I danced around quite a bit to Sting and Shaggy singing Just One Lifetime. And on so many levels, first of all, Patience was the one who introduced me to this partnership between Sting and Shaggy. And just like Patience and I, Sting and Shaggy come from very different backgrounds, and they've come together to create beautiful music. And Patience and I also come from very different backgrounds with very different lived experiences. And I think that when we set out to write a book, at least for me, I'm a chemistry major. I was a physician. I never wrote anything of consequence. So the idea of collaborating to write such an important book, really that song was such an inspiration, because it's, if you listen to the lyrics, it's really about grabbing what you can and making the most of what life gives you, and definitely making lemonade out of lemons.
Well, you've been in the life-giving space in the world in so many ways in your work. I would love to hear if you have a most challenging or proud moment that you can share with us. I'd love to hear a little bit about sort of what's inspired you and made you who you are.
Thank you. I'm really proud of this book, and not only because I never imagined writing a book, but because I think it brings together so much of the things that I think are important in the, being able to imagine a better world. I'm the most proud of creating things, and certainly the people who are involved with those creations. So I'm a builder, and I have an entrepreneurial mindset. And nothing gives me more joy than bringing other people along on that journey and building things together.
To that end, what was the impetus and what are the results of the double X edge?
I'm going to dial back just a little bit to my career in medicine. And one of the reasons you brought up my reproductive health commitment in my introduction. And as a women's health provider and doctor, I discovered really early on how essential women are to not just their own health, but also the health of their families and their communities. And when women don't have the opportunity to control the size of their families, it erodes everything in their culture and in their family and their culture. And so that has always been paramount. But I'm at my core a problem solver. In fact, some people would say that I'm a problem seeker. I'm always looking for the root cause of why something's not working. And in my career in medicine, it was clear that it's all about who controls the capital, and that the reason why we don't have new innovation in the field of obstetrics and gynecology is because women aren't the ones making the decision about how capital's allocated. It was only when there was a woman leading the NIH and their $7 billion budget that we actually started to see women's health prioritized at the government level. And this played out in so many of the ways that my own career in medicine, there weren't women at the senior leadership level, even though women were the largest consumers and the workforce in healthcare was largely made up of women. So all of those things, and the XX Edge really was the opportunity to bring together all the evidence across all asset classes, across all financial decision making, that demonstrates that when women are at the table, better things happen. And better is defined in two ways, both better financial returns and better social impact.
Well, thank you so much for making all of those connections so transparent in that work. But now you're actually getting into doing the systems change that's required. What do you think are the most important levers that we can all turn on today?
Well, there's so many. And as my work in the gender finance space and gender lens investing has been robust and so exciting and challenging. And it's been tremendous to see how much innovation's happening and how many more people are getting into the space and how much more interest there is in investing with a gender lens. But nevertheless, it's still a really, really tiny part of the overall market and the overall investing opportunities. And as that space grows, it's almost cannibalizing itself, because the 90, 95% of capital that's still invested in traditional, frankly, white men's ways, they're not seeing the opportunity. And so the XX Edge was our attempt to jump the fence and say, hey, white guys, you're missing out on a really important lever, not only for your own portfolio, but actually to change the social construct and to change all of the social impact that we might care about. So that was our main driver. And I think that ultimately is the most important lever, is the diversifying who's allocating capital. And gender diversity, but also racial diversity is essential, and cognitive diversity of all kinds, that people sitting around the table making asset allocation decisions all look exactly the same. They're going to miss stuff. They're going to not see the risks. They're going to miss innovative opportunities. So those are the themes that came out of the book loud and clear.
Are you seeing, I mean, you're taking action yourself by organizing others and actually making investments, but you just mentioned the cannibalizing ourselves. So I saw an article that had no basis in any kind of science or research last year that said something about like, oh, if you get a women's venture fund investing in you, you're kind of less likely to get the bigger, more traditional money on its heels. Tell me more about what you're seeing there and what your belief is around that.
Well, I don't think that's completely wrong. When we started out and built the fund at Rhea Ventures, that was the advice from really super good friends who had been in the venture capital space for a long time. And they said that you're not going to get a good pipeline. You're never going to find the type of portfolio companies you need. And when a great company does come along, the institutional investors are going to snap it up and there's not going to be room at the table for you. Yeah. And actually, those things haven't really happened. First of all, when you have money and you're able to put together a fund, the pipeline companies show up. And as you, it's a self-fulfilling paradigm, right? So that the more money you have, the more companies there are, and then there are more people are interested in bringing more money to the table. So even in this relatively soft venture capital cycle that we're experiencing, there certainly are lots of exciting companies out there. And then in regards to, is there room at the table for us? Yeah, there have been some examples where there's been a really exciting innovation in women's health, where for some reason, the traditional institutional white-led companies, investors have been attracted to them and they haven't made room. And I can only really think of one or two examples of this. But actually what's happening is that even if we have a smaller amount to invest, because we're a relatively small fund, the companies really want us at the table. They really appreciate our mission focus. They really appreciate our experience and our how deep we go in health equity and healthcare more generally. And so they make room for us at the table. They make room for us as board seats or board observer seats and are willing to give us a smaller entry size in order to have us at the table.
So I think of you, I mean, reproductive health is the focus of your venture firm, right? What does that encompass? I think of you as reproductive justice also, but I'd love to hear sort of what are your favorite innovations you're seeing out there?
Well, so many. And how we define reproductive health includes really the full spectrum and the life cycle of women. So while we focus quite a bit on new contraceptive development, new platforms for delivery of contraceptive products, we're also very focused on safe, culturally competent maternal health care, which means largely focusing on Black women's health, maternal health outcomes. We're interested in cancer screening. We're interested in mental health. So it's not, while the bulk of our investments are specifically in reproductive health and maternal health, we do see that it's a larger spectrum than that. I'm really excited about a couple new contraceptive products that are non-hormonally based and would really open up the opportunity for lower cost, easily accessible contraception for men as well as for women. I'm very excited about making birth control available over the counter. As many folks know, there's a progesterone-only pill that'll be available over the counter this year. But we need to also have traditional birth control pills that are both estrogen and progesterone available because they're a better product and more reliable. Maternal health, I think that there's a lot of great innovation that leans into cultural congruency, which means are the people taking care of Black women when they're pregnant representative from their own cultures and their own communities in a way that guarantees them a better health outcome?
Yeah.
There's a lot we can learn from community health workers around the world in terms of how do you actually protect people and fully understand their preventive health needs that we have not incorporated into American medicine.
I really think having someone with your background in this role is absolutely brilliant and essential. And I'm so glad that you're doing this. And you have real intellectual heft. And I would love to hear sort of, you said making the connections, or what does the research say and how does it explain the outperformance of women in the financial decision-making? Because you see it at the founders perform better. You see the venture firms make better decisions and have higher returns. What's that about? You've heard me say it before. My goal is for you to run the world. And let me tell you why. It's not just because I think you're fabulous, badass, and you know that I do. It is actually protective for all of us. When you have diversity on a board, for example, product recalls happen 3 times faster. Companies perform better. It's better for people, it's better for profits, and it's better for the planet. We need you to join a corporate board, and we need you to know when to advocate for it in your day job. October 16th through the 20th, How Women Lead is hosting our extremely successful 4th annual Get On Board Week. This week is full of virtual programming, content rich, but also connecting, connecting, connecting. And we know 85% of all board searches, they're word of mouth and through connections. We want to connect you with private equity firms that are seeking board members. We want to connect you with other women board members who've already done it, who are being tagged and can't take all the board seats that are coming their way. We will have board opportunities that we will share with you. Really, truly, this is our way to connect and propel you. This is 1 week, but what happens is people connect with people on LinkedIn, or they create mastermind groups that they support each other all year long. I want you to step up and be part of the solution. My daughter needs you on the board. But I also want to inspire you to think about all the women around you, where you can be the person who inspires her and says, I see you on a board. I think you should be on a board. Check it out. Come and explore. Invite 10 friends. Tell them that you believe in them. It's the greatest gift you can give. Somebody did it for you. And I want to encourage you to do it for another woman. I look forward to seeing you at Get On Board Week, so we can get thousands of women on boards. This year, our focus beyond the private boards that we've always focused on, we're adding the private board space. It's time. Thanks for your partnership. Send the letter back down and help another woman get into action.
Well, first of all, I want to make it clear that while we talk about women versus men, that we recognize that these are tendencies and that gender is not binary. We know that. But most of the research has been done with people who self-describe as women or people who self-describe as men. So I just want to be clear about that. But women tend to approach decision-making differently. They tend to be more collaborative. They tend to bring in their networks more than men do. They tend to have less ego. So that means that they're more willing to listen to other opinions. Women tend to evaluate risk differently. It doesn't mean that they're not willing to take risks, but they assess risk differently. And so much of what we know about risk-taking can be found in the gambling literature. And we know that men are much more likely to be influenced by social pressure to take risks that maybe aren't
rational.
That's
so interesting. That's like the opposite of what culturally we've been told, right?
That's right. Absolutely. And then the last character, well, there's two other things. One is that women tend to be more willing to take the long view and not risk long-term outcomes for short-term gains. But then another really important characteristic, and this applies not just to gender, but also to any kind of diversity, is that women tend to be closer to the problems that we want to solve. So whether it's in healthcare or education or climate, food insecurity, all the things that the best innovations, investment in opportunities are trying to solve for, women tend to be closer to those problems. And that means that they're going to have a different understanding of how to solve those problems. This is something that we really learned decades ago in healthcare, that if you don't bring the people who are most impacted by the problems, people who have the disease you're trying to cure, into the conversation, that you're going to miss opportunities. So this notion of being proximate to the problems is really important as to why people with different lived experience bring so much more innovation to the table. So those were the things that stood out for us in our research, and it cuts across whether you're talking about a local school board or the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. The other thing that I want to make clear is that this is not a replacement strategy. This is about diversity and adding more seats to the table. If you have a board that's all white men, or the senior leadership team is all white men, and you want to help drive this kind of performance by diversity, it can mean just making more room, pulling up more seats. We know that when women entered the marketplace, that it actually increased productivity in such a way that it pays for itself. So this is not about a single limited pie. This is about creating more pie for everybody. And I think the research robustly demonstrates that.
You know, I do a lot of work on the women in the corporate boardroom. That's what we did. Like you were, it became a requirement by the asset management firms first. And then there's a law in California, but people would increase the size of their board. You're not taking a public company board member and saying, sorry, you can't serve. We're going to replace you with a woman. That's not what happened. One of the things we also found is it upgames the men in the room. So it disrupts groupthink ultimately, right? So the men, they prepare differently. The men actually are better contributors in the group because I think we all know, like if you're with a bunch of people just like you, I would lean back and be like, Ruth takes all the healthcare stuff. I just do whatever Ruth says. I'll deal with the fintech stuff and she'll trust me to bring the best about fintech. And instead of that, everybody sort of prepares equally on and really, really steps up in a different way. So I think we get more of everybody's brains.
But, that's right. You know, that's absolutely right.
So what's kind of interesting for everybody who's listening here, Ruth was talking about having spoken with some other people about whether or not she was going to see deal flow. I had similar experiences when we started How Women Invest. And I went back and looked, there were only 12 women-run venture firms in 2010, Ruth. And there's over 300 today. It is a brand new space, really. And despite having all of these new entrants who are now experienced, good investors, you and I both have great track records to show, although they're not 30-year track records. They're 5 and 10-year track records, right? But we have not changed the dollar amounts or the percentage of money going to women founders in meaningful ways. And I just saw a report talking about the paltry number of companies getting to what we call Series B, which is getting larger and investments to really grow your company, that there's so very few women founders that ever make it to that stage. How are we going to change that? How are we going to get more money into this side of the equation? Like you said, it's all about economic opportunities. It's not taking anything away from anybody else. It's moving growth into these blue ocean opportunities.
Well, so taking a systems approach, to me, it's all comes down to who's controlling the money, right? And so whether you're talking about a venture fund or private equity or mortgage brokers or in the public space, ETFs, who's deciding on what index to use, or certainly in mutual funds and other types of public equities, that it's the people at the portfolio management level that I think are essential to solving for this problem. Okay. And we know that right now at the portfolio manager level, that probably around 8% of portfolio management decisions are made by gender diverse teams. Not only that, if you use the denominator of AUM rather than the number of bodies, it's clear that men who are portfolio managers control probably around 12 and a half times more capital. So it's not just about bringing more people and more people of color and more women into this space. It's actually helping them manage more money, which is why we're standing up the Diverse Investing Collective, which is our goal is 33 by 33, which is we want to see 33% of assets managed by gender and racially diverse teams by 2033. So tweaking the paradigm. So it's not just about the percentage of people in these chairs, but actually, well, how much money are they managing? And I also want to make it clear that it's about diversity. It's not about we just want all women teams. No, we want diverse teams. And we're defining diverse as anything more than 30, between 30 and 33 and 66%. So wish us luck. Hopefully we can change things.
Yes, exactly. Well, we're in the same team here trying to drive capital in different ways. Women have more money than wealth than we've ever had before. We got just in 6 months this year, we get $140 million worth of commitments to invest in venture. So I'm seeing moves, but it's not big enough. We need to move trillions, not millions, if we're really going to. And we're in this fragile recovery right now. We need all of us bringing our best selves and having the resources to really maximize our engagement. Did you have a big aha moment? Is there something that really surprised you in your research?
Yes. So I am the daughter of a woman, a very successful consultant in economics and political science, and went on to make tons of money as a macroeconomic consultant, consumer forecasting. And she would take me to the bank with her when she deposited her paycheck to make it clear that she was making more than my doctor father. But my mom never talked about her children at work. She was determined to show up in a man's world. She wore beautiful Armani suits and an incredibly heavy leather briefcase that definitely destroyed her shoulder and would traipse through the airports and all. And she was really proud of that. And I'll tell you how many times my brother and I had to take cabs home from school because no one was available to pick us up. But that's besides the point. The point is that she saw her lived experience as being completely separate from what she was doing at work. And she was very successful. But what I learned in our writing of this book and the research is that our lived experiences are actually essential, especially when we're talking about investing, and that we shouldn't be scared to hide what's going on for us at home, that I make it a point to show up at these investment conversations and making it clear that I'm a physician first, because I think that's really relevant. I've met a nurse entrepreneur who was really hiding the fact that she was a nurse. I said, no, you're a nurse. You should make it clear to your investors that that's your identity. Bring it to the table. And if you've got kids that are sick at home, and that's actually an important part of how you think about investment decisions. And so that was my biggest aha, that the world has changed and that we don't have to show up like men or whoever the dominant culture is in the workplace, that we need to lean into who we are as people. And that's actually going to make not only work more interesting, but actually more successful.
Oh my goodness. That, to me, that's such a beautiful capstone. It feels like a mic drop moment, Ruth. Dr. Shaver, thank you so much for being with us. You have inspired, and I can't wait to see the impact of all the continued work that you do. You are such an important voice and leader in our space. I want to say thank you.
Thank you for having me, Julie. It's a pleasure.
And with that, I want to thank you all for listening to today's episode of How Women Inspire. And because your inspiration should not stop when this podcast ends, head over to our website, howwomenlead.com. Follow us on LinkedIn at How Women Lead and subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast app to find out how you can proactively take charge and step into your power through our workshops and activism. In our loving network, we want to propel you. See you next time, ladies. And remember to be unabashedly visible.